This is where normal comes to die. Mediocrity meets its final demise, and the status quo is unabashedly dismantled. Welcome to Reinvention Radio. Now, here's your host, Steve Ulscher.
Hello, right. Yeah, we got volume. Volume is good. It helps, right? That's all a good thing. Welcome here to Reinvention Radio. I'm your host, Steve Ulscher. We got a very interesting full house today, don't we?
Yes, we do.
We have a very interesting full house today. All right, so along with the lovely Mary Goulet, we got Rich Otey, White Wade just barging in here. Thanks, Wade. Awesome. Good to have you. And we got my little man, my youngest. We got Xavier here today. You want to say hi?
Hi.
No, get closer. Say
hi.
Who are you? What's your name?
Xavier.
Yeah, how old are you, Xavier?
Nine.
Yeah, why are you here today? Yeah, what are? You on spring break? Mm-hmm. Am I your daddy?
Yeah.
Sorry.
He's the cutest one. Oh my gosh, I just want to gobble him up.
That's our little man right there. That's our little man. What do you want to be when you grow up, little man?
A movie director.
A movie director.
Wow. Nice. That's so interesting. Very specific.
It is. And interestingly enough, we have a former Hollywood producer coming on the show today.
Agent.
Right. Former Hollywood agent. And she can probably give us some insight in terms of what Xavier needs to do. So how
That's
fun will be
cool.
that? All right. So, Rich, wait. You got to jump into this. So I believe in this stuff. I don't know exactly what I believe, but I know I believe in it to some extent, which is that when you experience something that is like, I have been there before, I believe there's something to that, right? Like, you've had deja vu. Right.
Oh, yeah.
So you've had deja vu, right? So you have that whole deja vu thing where you feel like you've been there before, you don't know why, but it's like, oh, my God, this feels, like, so familiar to me. And you had a dream last night, you were saying.
Yeah.
That is so wild. Tell us about the dream, man.
So I was basically sitting. I woke up and just felt that's a super surreal dream I just had with Trish and her family. And it felt like I was literally at her house when she was a kid.
So you were at Trish. So you,
yeah.
at this age, you were at Trish's. Or you were
I just was present, I think. I didn't really see myself now that I think it out loud mm-hmm. with you asking that. It was mm-hmm. more just like I felt like I was in the
You're
room.
Viewing.
I was viewing
You're
that room.
Watching what was going on.
And it just felt like I was in there. And then
wait, set the stage. So what does this house look like? What does the room look like? Where? How old is Trish at this point? So Trish is your wife, just in case people don't know.
And she's just about Xavier's age.
So like nine,
she's
really?
Somewhere between like say 7 and 10.
So you see her as a little girl.
Yeah, I see her as a little girl.
Wow.
I see her sisters. I see her parents. And all of a sudden on the radio, I hear, rainy days and Mondays always get me down.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was like, whoa, it creeped me out again. Not in a creepy in a woo-woo, not creepy in a creepy way.
Right.
And then sure enough, when I later on that, this morning when we were getting Olivia ready and everything, I just sang that real quick and was asking Trish. She's like, oh my God, you know, we just listen to that all the time. Da, da, da. And then we started talking about it and describing almost identically what I had just seen. So it was just like one of those complete deja vu moments. It was a trip.
So had you ever talked about that song before?
Never.
You had never talked about that song before?
Never.
I think that is such a trip.
And I don't know if it was one of those things in my head because I hear the rain and it's because it rained last night.
Right.
It's still raining.
Right.
And, you know, so
but there's a million rain songs. Rain drops keep falling on my hand. I mean, like, whatever. There's a million rain songs. Dancing in the rain. Or
but
singing in
the
rain.
One.
That was singing in the rain. But that was the one that came to mind, which, interestingly enough, is the song that your wife, as a little girl, heard growing up in her house with her parents. Interesting. And so had you ever been to that house?
No. Never.
You had never. So the
so
room.
You
don't know what it would
it?
Look like. Don't know. Yeah, I mean, I was getting ready with Olivia, so we didn't go super deep on it. But it was just one of those knowings without knowings. I just don't really know how to explain it. But you kind of just.
Yeah.
You just.
Yeah. So Mary, do you believe in deja vu?
I do, but I also believe that we can, if we're sensitive enough, you can get movies of scenarios and situations if you're tuned in
mm-hmm.
For other people and for yourself.
So what do they call it? Like when you're dreaming, it's like there's a sort of like a stage of sleep where you are dreaming, but you're awake enough to recognize that you are dreaming. It's like
lucid dreaming?
Lucid, that's what they call it, right? Yeah. Like lucid. Have you ever had one of those like out of body kind of things where you like look down and you literally like can see yourself sleeping or you travel or anything like that in a way that feels so real that it's like, oh my God, like this has got to be going on. Like that's the weirdest thing. I've felt that before.
I've only had those on naps, though. As strange as that sounds. I only have those during naps.
Because you just don't get into that deep sleep.
Yeah, that's probably it.
Lucid means like when you're kind of awake, but you're really sleeping, so you feel like you're in it, but you know you're sleeping. So it's kind of like that in-between stage. Tell us about what's the weirdest dream you've ever had? I want to know, Xavier. Put your face to the mic. Come this way. Closer. Right there. Yeah, tell us. What's the weirdest dream? I died?
Oh.
Is that weird or is that sad?
Oh, my goodness.
I don't know.
How did I die? What happened?
You had Ebola.
I had Ebola. Wow.
Oh, this kid is on it.
Are you sure it wasn't the Zika virus? It was definitely Ebola. So did it, like, start eating away at my skin?
We were in Africa.
And I got Ebola.
And so did an elephant.
So me and an elephant both got Ebola at the same time. Were we in the hospital together? Was like the elephant in one bed and I was in the other bed?
Mm-mm.
No. Was the elephant like on an IV? You know what that is? Like where they put the needle in the arm and then like there's a little drip, drip, drip thing.
I had one of those.
You did have one of those. Actually, you've had an IV more than once, I think.
No, like 6 times.
Like 6 times. Yeah, there you go. He's a hospital pro.
Wow.
All right. So what else happened? So I had Ebola and then what happened?
And then mom died too.
So you just basically, you're just in it for the inheritance. That's what it is.
What's
happening? It means when your parents die, you get the stuff that they leave for you, which is called an inheritance. So if mommy and daddy.
And I was rich.
Exactly. So if mommy and daddy die, then you get all of our shit. You get all of our stuff. And I've got life insurance. So if I die, you guys get $6 million. If mom dies, you get another million. So if we end up dead, rich, and married, right here, right now, I want to just put this on the record. Episode 102 or whatever we're doing here in Reinvention Radio.
Came back alive.
And then grandpa came. Oh, there we go. So,
and you're actually going to want us to witness the fact that this conversation's happening when Rich and I are going to help him.
Here, sign this. Okay.
Mary gets two.
Right. We don't need much. All we ask for is 30%. You know, we're not selfish. 30%
each. We know you have a future.
Yeah, right, 30% each. You'll be set. All right.
And then Isaiah died.
You're like obsessed with dying. Why? I know why you're obsessed with dying. Why do you think he's obsessed with dying?
Because of video games.
Well, okay. So you shoot a lot of people in video games. But why else do you think he's obsessed with dying? You guys know.
By saying you're going to die by Ebola, maybe you let him watch the news or something?
No, why do you think he's dreaming about people dying? Think about it. Think about...
Because of grandpa.
Well, because of grandpa. People that you know have loved and then have died. That happens.
Easter.
But what does mommy do?
Oh.
Oh, yeah,
she is
yeah.
The funeral director.
Uh-huh.
She works with the people who have passed away. So
what happens to Pema and Ananda?
They were rich, too.
They were rich too. Okay, well, then there you have it.
Since I am their guardian.
You are like their dog parents.
I am.
They had diamond collars.
They had diamond collars. So Pema went all out. So Pema's our little white
and
dog.
Pink.
You should use the money to make a movie about it and make even more money.
I love this. This is great. So you're going to take the money that you're going to get from our inheritance when we die, and then you're going to take that money and you're going to make a movie that's going to make you more money.
Yes.
That's super smart right there.
And I'm going to be his manager.
And our guest today could probably help out like in terms of what to do so
and
that you can manage him properly.
And then I lived with like Tiala and everybody for a little bit.
And then you lived with everybody. Okay, those are our family friends. We actually just had some family friends come in from Chicago. Kids are on spring break. That's why my little man is here with me. The oldest decided he'd rather hang out with friends. We won't hold that against him. But I am sort of holding it against him. But just a little bit.
But
because I love him and I wanted him to be here too. And you are here, which is awesome. So we love having you here.
It
only goes down to, in terms of the kids wanting to be with you.
You're right.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, it's so true.
There is only 1 minute left.
He's a radio pro. He is looking at the clock. He knows how much time is left in this segment. All right, very cool. So before I forget, is it just me or do people lose their mind in San Diego when it rains? Like, do people just completely freak? I don't get it. It took me an hour and 15 minutes to get here today. Yeah. An hour and 15 minutes.
I didn't think the traffic was bad on the freeway at all.
Oh, God. It was brutal. So,
it was horrible coming
it
north.
It was really, really.
In the morning.
Yeah, it was.
Dave and I always go for a walk. We go down to the beach, do like 3-4 miles and come back up. And he goes, oh, gosh, we missed our window. It's raining. I'm like, that is not rain. That is called drizzle.
Oh, man. They have no idea, right?
Like there was a mist. Like you walk past one of those restaurants in Palm Desert.
Yeah, people just lose. People just lose
like,
their minds.
It's raining. Like we're walking.
There is 45 seconds.
There is. You're gonna be. So here's what. So Xavier's gonna be our clock. So throughout the show, he's gonna just count it down. Yeah,
that's fine. Because Rich never lets me see the clock. So I'm always waiting to. How do I get us out of this segment?
Yeah,
you got it.
All good. All right. So very cool that when you have the next dream, Xavier. I want you to write it down because I want to hear about some of your cool dreams. And I have to tell you, I don't remember any of my dreams. So I was thinking about this before because
I remember some.
You remember some. Do you remember your dreams, Mary?
Mm-hmm.
You do? Really? Mm-hmm. Like
a lot of them. Yeah.
Wow.
10 seconds.
I have no, and actually the clock's a little slow, but I have no recollection of my dreams. Like when I'm in it, I'm thinking like, oh man, okay, I'm totally gonna remember this. I'm totally gonna write it down. But then I never, ever, ever can remember it after I wake up. It's the weirdest thing.
It's frustrating.
Rich, do you remember your dreams? Obviously, you remember at least one.
I remembered one.
You remember at least one.
It depends on what I do when I first wake up. If just start going real fast on the day, I never remember.
Right. All right. So speaking of dreams, here's where it gets really interesting because we're going to have Christine Hasler on, and she's going to talk about being a 20-something, the expectation hangover, and how pursuing your dreams in your 20s might actually be the best and perfect
that
time to do it.
Segue.
Nice segue, right? All right. With more on Reinvention Radio right after this.
You were born to do one amazing thing, but most people spend a lifetime trying to identify what it is. If you're in a job you don't like or are unemployed, if you're in a state of transition or just can't shake that nagging feeling that you were meant and made to do something extraordinary, then the Reinvention Workshop is exactly what you need. Led by award-winning self-help author Steve Olscher, the Reinvention Workshop will forever change your life. The Reinvention Workshop takes you step-by-step through Steve's proven formula that has helped so many people get on the right path and clear about what they were born to do. Take the first step to realizing the life you deserve and desire by visiting thereinventionworkshop.com today. No more delays. No more denial. Reconnect with your true self. Learn to live with purpose and conviction and become who you were born to be. The world is waiting for you. What are you waiting for? Log on to thereinventionworkshop.com today. That's thereinventionworkshop.com.
Looking to be a successful entrepreneur? The virtual assistant industry continues to be a top choice for those looking to start their own business. The problem can be how to become a virtual assistant. Many turn to the Bible of the VA industry, the book, Virtual Assistant, the series, and it's the perfect guide for office managers, executive assistants, and other administrative professionals looking to make the transition from employee to successful business owner. Go to vatheseries.com to get your copy today.
And now, back to Reinvention Radio. Here's your host, Steve Olscher.
All right, welcome back to another edition here of Reinvention Radio. I'm your host, Steve Olscher, along with the lovely Mary Gallet, Rich Ote, and the Reinvention Radio crew hanging out. All right, let's do this. Let's bring Christine on. She's been patient enough. We got Christine Hasler joining us. Christine, are you there? All good? Yeah, hi.
I'm here.
You are.
Steve doesn't trust me to run the board properly.
It's all good. I just point at things, and like that's the nice thing about sitting on this side of the tables. I just point at things, and magic happens. It's awesome. All right, so Christine, bring everybody up to speed in terms of who you are and what you're doing, because you get a pretty interesting story. As a matter of fact, we were talking about dreams and like dream jobs and that sort of thing, and frankly, the job you had, I can't even imagine. And it's like you talk to 100 people, at least 20 of them will tell you that's a dream job right there. I mean, working in Hollywood, being an agent and all that. So you walked away from all that. But take us through who you are, what you're doing, and then let's take a step back in terms of why you left that career.
Sure, sure. And I have a tip for you on how to remember your dreams better, too.
Ooh,
if you want that.
Cool. Absolutely. Yeah.
So I got to start kind of back in fourth grade when a bunch of people started the I Hate Christine Club, and I all of a sudden started being bullied and ostracized. And became massively insecure. And so, like a lot of people who are massively insecure, I became an extreme overachiever to compensate for it, because mm-hmm. whenever we feel less than in some way, we've got to come up with a way to feel more than. And that very, very driven part of me led me. And if you're massively insecure and very driven, Hollywood's like a really good place to go to try to like prove yourself.
Well, at least for part of the equation, because being massively insecure in Hollywood is probably not a good idea just in the scheme of things, because that's got to be a tough place.
It's a tough place.
I mean, you got to be so thick-skinned to get through there. But nevertheless, you were driven, and that was a good place for you, because it helped you obviously build your career.
Exactly. I could compensate in other ways. And so, you know, I loved working in Hollywood. Was great. I started out as an assistant in a big agency, worked my way up, worked in production for a while, and then finally was an agent. I was the youngest ever female agent. And I kept thinking, when I got promoted or when I made a certain amount of money or when something happened, then I'd love it, then I'd be happy. And nothing was fulfilling that void. Nothing was really making me happy. And I'm not the first person to say this. Like, you know, you check things off the list and you're still not happy and you feel a sense that something's really missing. But I also felt tremendous guilt because I had this really coveted job that so many people wanted.
Right.
And I was miserable. Plus, I'd spent my whole life basically working up to this point. I didn't have a plan B because I was so certain that my plan A was the path of my dreams.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I had the rude awakening of, I really don't like this at all. I don't like the lifestyle. I don't like the business. And being an agent, you have to sell. And I just don't like to sell. That's not my what.
Mm.
And I ended up at like 25, 26, something around there, just resigning one day. And it was a very, very scary leap of faith. And I kind of thought, like,
Hold on. You got to set the stage for us. So when you talk about being an agent, we're talking like a William Morris or a creative artist, So we're talking one of the majors. So who were some of the people that you were working with? I assume you can drop names at this point, correct?
Well, I represented a lot of TV writers, producers, directors. So a lot of the people that you wouldn't know in mm-hmm. terms of they're not big stars, but they're mm-hmm. the people that are, you know, like J.J. Abrams, who did Lost and all those shows, was one of the clients we worked with. So it was people that were the showrunners. So they weren't
like the literary
ones on top of the screen. The literary, yeah. Exactly.
Interesting.
Exactly.
And so that had to be at least a fairly lucrative position. I mean, so from the financial side of the equation, I mean, you were in your 20s and making really good money and working with some pretty influential people. What was the trigger, right? I mean, I didn't really want to cut you off because I know you're running through the story, but there was obviously a moment where you woke up and you just said, you know what, the money's great, the people are great, I love that element of what I'm doing, but I hate selling, and that obviously was enough to push you over the edge to say, this is something that I don't want to continue doing. Do you remember that exact moment?
There were two moments. There were two moments that were like put me over the edge. And I'll share the one that was the second, because that was the one that pushed me over. So I'm riding up in the elevator, and one of the female partners was in the elevator. And she looked at her cell phone, and she said to her assistant, who was riding also in the elevator, "Oh, wow, my daughter just said her first word." And the assistant said, "What was it?" And she said, "Oh, it was Ola," because she spends more time with the nanny.
Mm.
And in that moment, it hit me two things. It, you know, working moms, that's awesome. But her level of disconnection and, like, no emotional response to that,
mm-hmm.
I was like, oh, my gosh, this is me in 10, 15 years.
But it didn't have to be you. You could have balanced work and life, and you're a different person. Maybe she was just a cold bitch, you know? I mean, like, there are people like that.
There are people like that up there.
Right? You know, but it's scary. But it scared you.
I was becoming a cold bitch.
Ooh,
I was becoming a cold bitch.
Okay.
I was becoming somebody that I didn't like anymore.
Ooh, so that's a nature versus nurture thing right there. So this is what we talk about. So naturally, you're a kind, warm, loving person, but you got in that environment and you felt yourself starting to change. Interesting.
I did.
Nurture. Uh-huh.
Exactly.
All right.
Environment.
All right. So you saw that and you were like, oh my God, that is not who I want to be. But you got to take us back. You can't just say there's two moments and then I'm only going to give you one. What was the other
I'll give you the other one. So the other one was, I mean, it's not that exciting of a story, but I basically sold the show to these comedians that I discovered, and I was so passionate about them, and I was so excited, and they were going to get their big break on a network, and they were nobodies, but they were, as an agent, like, you want to find that diamond in the rough. You want to find that gem. And I found them. And then one of my higher-ups in my department made me attach a showrunner who was, like, a crusty, older, like, no one wanted to work with the showrunner.
All right, hold on. Back up.
Okay.
Crusty, older.
Okay.
That I'm not worried about because I know I fall into that category.
Which is who we are today.
Yeah,
I just don't sound crusty.
I just want to know what a showrunner is and how you can attach something crusty using the phrase showrunner along with crusty. How does crusty and showrunner work together? And what is a showrunner?
I love that I haven't talked Hollywood in so long. This is so much fun.
See what I mean? People are normally enamored because it's like movie stars and the whole thing. I mean, we grew up watching movies, so there are people like me who kind of still like that whole Hollywood. So my kid says he wants to be a director. I'm like, cool. I'm going to live vicariously through him.
You're going to be dead.
Well, or that.
You're going to use my money.
Yeah.
Yeah, he'll have $6 million to fund his first movie.
All right. So what's a showrunner and what was crusty?
So a showrunner, well, I don't know what on him was crusty. I don't want to know that part. But a showrunner is someone who is like the executive producer of the show. So they're the ones that basically run the show, do all the hiring. They're the boss of the show. So every show needs the showrunner who's pretty much the executive producer.
Which is so unfair because they usually get assigned and they have done nothing to get to that point.
Exactly.
Right?
Now infuriated me.
Nepotism.
Because he attached this person that didn't do anything to deserve it, that the talent didn't want to work with, that the network didn't like, but he needed to get his client a job. And I was, you know, this 25-year-old, only female in the department, and basically I didn't have a choice. And it killed the deal. It killed the show.
Wow.
And I had to call these guys that I was so excited about and who thought they, you know, their dreams were coming true, speaking of dreams, and I had to call them and say, it's dead.
Wow. And all because of that guy being attached to it?
Yep.
Oh, no. It's very, like, sensitive, the very beginning parts of a deal.
How does one guy who the agency says has to be involved, how does one guy kill a deal like that? How does that work?
It happens
all the time.
It's so personality-driven and reputation-driven that if the network's like, no, we don't want to work with them, and the agency's like, well, then you don't get the show, then it can kill the deal.
Wow. Okay, so that was a wake-up call.
That was a big one. I get the one about the first word from the child, but...
But that's a big one, too, because you...
They work so hard.
So in the music industry, that's like an A&R person, right? An A&R person goes out, tries to find the talent, brings them to the label, you know, bang, next thing you know, you got this big star. The A&R rep is like, you know, this big hero, that sort of thing. So that is kind of what you were doing. You were like in an A&R role, but in this genre. Okay.
Exactly.
So you're in the elevator, you get that final moment, and you're like, oh, my God, I am becoming that person.
And then I had... My first and only panic attack, where it really started to hit me of, oh, my gosh, am I really going to do this? Am I really going to leave? Because my whole identity and security was wrapped into this career. I had wanted to work in Hollywood since I was 10 years old.
Sure.
So I really started to freak out, and I didn't know what else I would do. And I got off the elevator, had to ride back down the elevator. The office was in Beverly Hills. I took a little walk around Beverly Hills. And then I called my dad because, you know, when you have those moments where you need someone to give you permission to do something scary, and my dad is a softie when it comes to me, so I thought he'd be, like, good for the person that could give me permission. And I called him, and I remember being like, Dad, I don't like this. I think I want to quit. I feel so guilty. This is what I spent my life working towards. And he said something that really was infuriating at the time, but it was a really good dad move. He said to me, I cannot make this decision for you. It's your choice, and I trust you. Mm. And he hung up.
Yeah.
Not hung up in an angry way, but just knew that, like, as an adult, you know, I had to make this choice. And it was one of the scariest choices I've made, especially at the time. You know, I was 25 years old.
Yeah.
And that led into what then became like the worst 8 months of my life.
All right, well let's do this. Let's take a quick break here on Reinvention Radio, which we're going to have to do because otherwise Wade gets really really mad at us. But I want to talk about what happened after you made that decision. Obviously, there are a lot of people out there who are feeling the way you felt in that moment where they're like, I have got to do something completely different. And yet you had the courage to do it. So we want to understand what gave you that courage, what gave you that power, and maybe it'll empower others to make that kind of choice. All right, more on Reinvention Radio right after this.
You were born to do one amazing thing, but most people spend a lifetime trying to identify what it is. If you're at a job you don't like or are unemployed, if you're in a state of transition or just can't shake that nagging feeling that you were meant and made to do something extraordinary, the Reinvention Workshop is exactly what you need. Led by award-winning self-help author Steve Ulcher, the Reinvention Workshop will forever change your life. The Reinvention Workshop takes you step by step through Steve's proven formula that has helped so many get on the right path and be clear about what they were born to do. Take the first step for realizing the life you deserve and desire by visiting TheReinventionWorkshop.com today. No more delays, no more denial. Reconnect with your true self. Learn to live with purpose and conviction and become who you were born to be. The world is waiting for you. What are you waiting for? Log on to TheReinventionWorkshop.com. That's TheReinventionWorkshop.com.
And now, back to Reinvention Radio. Here's your host, Steve Ulcher.
All right, welcome to another Reinvention Radio. Okay, sweet. I am super excited here because this is the kind of story that I get. I mean, this puts fire in my soul because I love the story of people who have what, on the surface, it looks like is everything. And they decide, you know what? I don't buy into that. That is not the life that I want. I want to do something different, and I'm going to start over from scratch. So, Mary, let's bring Christine back on. So, Christine, you decided in that moment, like, oh, my God, this is I have to make the choice to do something completely different. Now, you were making, I assume, some pretty good money at that point. You're in your 20s, mm-hmm. So making good money in your 20s mm-hmm. is, I mean, it's kind of an oxymoron. It doesn't, it's like, you know, it's like a unicorn. Most people in their 20s don't make good money. So to be in your 20s making good money, people are probably looking at you going like, why on earth would you leave that? Even if you hate it, just suck it up, love it, cash the checks, and do something else on your off hours.
I know, that's very, very tempting. Plus, I had, like, you know, all kinds of perks, fancy expense accounts, hanging out with celebrities, going to the Golden Globes and the Oscars and all those types of things. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I looked crazy to quit and to leave it behind. But I just felt, it just, every day, it felt more and more wrong. And I also, this whole formula of trying to find something like my job to make me happy wasn't happening. I mean, I had struggled with depression since I was 10 years old and was even medicated for it at 10 years old. And so that had always been a battle for me. And I consistently thought that, you know, something would cure it. And I think it was important for me to reach that level of success and notoriety and money and see that it wasn't, because that's when I started to realize, oh, wait a second, maybe it's not out there. And after I left my job, I didn't know what I was going to do. I thought I was really into health and fitness, so I thought I'd be like, you know, big health fitness person, like still really driven by my ego. But then, you know, all I could do was be a personal trainer. I was making no money. I ended up going into debt because I was trying to keep up with my Hollywood lifestyle. Like, I was trying to maintain the appearance mm-hmm. of still being like a really successful and important person.
Yeah.
And then I got really sick. I got diagnosed with an undiagnosable autoimmune disorder. Mm. And then I had some family stuff happen, and then I got engaged, and 6 months before my wedding, my fiancé dumped me.
Ooh.
So this all
Ouch.
Happened in like
Holy bucket.
6 to 8 months.
Right.
Was someone trying to tell you something?
Hey.
Yes, the universe was trying to tell me something, but I was stubborn at the time, and I you know, sort of needed to lose everything that I clung to for my identity, for security, for control, for all those things.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when I kind of was like, okay, uncle, like, I surrender, I give up. So it was a mix of courage, but also just I hit rock bottom, and I had no choice but to surrender.
Yeah.
And to start going a different direction.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting, though, because I've battled depression on and off over the years, and I don't think people really give it... People think depression is a choice, right? Like, you can just choose... Just snap yourself out of it. You know, it's like, shut up, suck it up, and go do something. You'll be fine. But what I don't think people recognize is that it is as much of a disease as other afflictions that people have. So you, on the surface, I mean, you had, I mean, look, you're a beautiful girl, beautiful woman now, right? I mean, but even back, I'm sure when you were younger, you're a beautiful girl. Obviously, you said you're into health and fitness. So, you know, you probably carried yourself really, really well. You were in that environment. People would say, like, what on earth would you have to be depressed about? You know, but at the same token, you couldn't feel like all of this would make you whole, and you recognize that right. You have to come, it has to come from within, but that's a lot easier said than done. So how did you make that shift to getting what you needed from within, as opposed to being driven by the external circumstances that most people would chalk up as saying, okay, this is exactly what you need. This is like the puzzle right here. You got all the pieces, you know, all the pieces are in place. Right. You should be a happy person, right? So how did you make that transition into seeing that it's got to come from within? And then what do you do to really nurture that?
Yeah. Well, I wish I could say, like, it was just step one, two, three, and it was, you know, just follow these steps and it's super easy. It was really a process. It was really a process, and that's why I'm so passionate about the last book I wrote, Expectation Hangover, because I really share how I got through all of this, you know, the tools that I used. And the big thing for me, especially with depression, and I've been totally off medication and never have an issue with it for about 7 years now, but the thing that I learned about depression for me is that it was so much about suppression. I suppress so many of my emotions, especially anger and sadness. I live very much in my head. I intellectualized everything. I was completely disconnected from my feelings.
Mm.
So my depression was more of like a numbing of like just a state of, I didn't feel like, oh my gosh, so awful, but I never felt good either. Like mm-hmm. I didn't feel like the joys and everything like that. So I remember when a big step for me is, one of my teachers, her name's Mona, unfortunately she's no longer with us, but on the physical plane, but I saw her when I was like, I don't know, 24, and I was confused about my job, and I was confused about my boyfriend, and I went into her house, and I talked for maybe 5 minutes, and she said, hold on, I'll be right back. And she left the room, and she came back with this big pillow with duct tape all over it, gardening gloves, and a tennis racket. And she said, honey, put on these gloves, grab this racket, hit this pillow, and scream your head off. And I was like, excuse me, I'm leaving. Are you crazy? And she said, you are angry. I'm like, I'm not angry. She's like, oh, yes, you are. Mm. Oh, yes, you are. And she really taught me how to do anger work and how to release my emotions and how to, like, let all the stuff that I had been kind of, like, holding the beach ball underwater, how to bring that out in a healthy, therapeutic way so I wasn't using it against myself and so I wasn't being irritable and so sort of this suppression could start to be released. So that was a big part of the process, was recognizing and understanding my emotions and learning how to move through them.
Yeah.
And the second part was really, you know, I think that in our culture we tend towards victim when things happen to us.
Mm-hmm.
And we tend to go, why is this happening to me? And the better question is to say, what am I learning?
Yeah.
You know, what is this opportunity bringing me to learn? And that was the biggest pivot for me, when I was willing to ask, what am I learning versus why is this happening? And I was also willing to not have it all figured out right away. I had to really understand it was a process.
Yeah, and obviously they're coming for you right
exactly.
now.
So
the crazy paddy wagon is on its way. Even though you tried, it's still coming for you.
I know, it's all a lie.
All right, so
you
somehow transitioned into becoming a voice for the 20-something generation, the book, you know, Expectation Hangover, and managing your expectations. And how did you make money, though? You came out of Hollywood, and it's like, what was that transition like for you? How did you transition from, okay, I'm this Hollywood person to I actually have a job that now pays me, not probably nearly as much as you were making. But what did that transition look like for you? And how did you end up being a voice for 20-somethings and getting into this whole managing your expectations kind of slant?
Well, I was working as a personal trainer. That's how I paid my bills. And I had one very pivotal night on my bathroom floor when all this kind of happened. And I don't know why, especially women, when we're miserable, we go lie on our bathroom floors. I mean, they're pretty gross.
Mary, did you ever go on your bathroom floor? Ever? Mary?
Where are you going with this, Christine, so I can answer him?
What did you do on the bathroom floor? I guess that's a better question.
Did you clean the bathroom floor, or did you cry in the fetal position?
I cried.
Right?
I was lying on the bathroom floor crying. And I had.
It's not, I got to tell you, it's not just a woman thing. I've cried in the fetal position on the bathroom floor as well.
I've done that.
Yeah. Matter of fact, I did it right before this show. I was in the fetal position.
That's better than after.
There you go.
Yeah. So I was on my bathroom floor, really contemplating, like, do I want to be here anymore? Like, do I even want to live anymore? I was very. It was a very, very low moment, and I had, for lack of a better word to describe it, I had a God moment. I had like an intervention of some kind where I felt this tremendous sense of love and compassion, and everything I had spent my life looking for on the outside, I felt on the inside.
So cool.
And it only lasted for a second because, you know, maybe a few seconds because my mind came in and tried to figure out what was happening. But it was enough of a glimpse of being like, that is what I'm devoted to. And I made a promise on my floor, and I was an agent, so I knew how to make deals. I wasn't particularly spiritual at the time. And I just said, all right, like, if I figure my way through this, I will dedicate my life to helping other people get to the other side. And then about a day or two later, I got a very clear format for my first book, 20-something, 20-everything. And I started talking to people, started being more vulnerable about my own experience, realized there wasn't a lot on the whole quarter-life crisis in terms of really how to deal with it from a personal growth perspective. There was information on how to get the guy or how to get the career or how to make the money, but I did all those things and they didn't work, so I wanted to take a deeper cut on it, at it and go inside out. And honestly, you know, that book, you know, my last book is for all ages, and the first part of my career was definitely for 20-somethings and millennials, and it just... I wrote from such a place of passion and such a place of vulnerability and such an honest place of wanting to help people. And I feel like, you know, anything we do from that energetic, when it's so pure like that, it does set us up to really do what we're here to do. And I feel like I finally, with that book, got on, like, the path that was totally meant for me.
Yep. All right.
And then magic just starts to happen.
Yeah, and that's amazing. And that story of being able to recognize in that moment that what you need only comes from within is something that, I mean, most of us can only hope to experience at some point in their life. So for you to be able to experience that at a fairly young age, I mean, that's really a blessing when you come right down to it and you've been able to take that sense, take that feeling, and propel yourself forward. So let's continue the story with Christine on Reinvention Radio right after this.
You were born to do one amazing thing, but most people spend a lifetime trying to identify what it is. If you're in a job you don't like or are unemployed, if you're in a state of transition or just can't shake that nagging feeling that you were meant and made to do something extraordinary, then the Reinvention Workshop is exactly what you need. Led by award-winning self-help author Steve Olscher, the Reinvention Workshop will forever change your life. The Reinvention Workshop takes you step-by-step through Steve's proven formula that has helped so many people get on the right path and clear about what they were born to do. Take the first step to realizing the life you deserve and desire by visiting thereinventionworkshop.com today. No more delays. No more denial. Reconnect with your true self. Learn to live with purpose and conviction and become who you were born to be. The world is waiting for you. What are you waiting for? Log on to thereinventionworkshop.com today. That's thereinventionworkshop.com.
And now, back to Reinvention Radio. Here's your host, Steve Ulsher.
All right, welcome back to another edition here of Reinvention Radio. All right, we got Christine Hassler on with us today, and really, really interesting story. And I, from experience, can tell you that making the choice to do something that is 180 degrees from what you were doing is crazy, crazy hard. And one of the things that I know you talk about is choosing me before we. Now, on the surface, Christine, some people are going to say that is pretty damn selfish. What do you tell those folks?
Well, I think there's a difference between being selfish and self-honoring. You know, selfish is when you're arrogant, you're only concerned about yourself, you're not taking into account other people's feelings, and you're just in it for you. Self-honoring is making the kind of choices that support your dreams, that support your values, and that not everybody necessarily is going to agree with. And so I think that's why they're labeled as selfish. But here's the thing, like, I know a lot of people pleasers and a lot of caretakers who live their life not wanting to upset anyone and not wanting to be called selfish, but they never feel a sense of fulfillment. And the people that have made the self-honoring choices along the way and taken some risks and maybe dealt with other people not being so happy with their choices or not living up to other people's expectations actually end up becoming better spouses, better friends, better sons, better daughters, better everything because they feel a sense of fulfillment. So I do think we show up better in the world when we are making those self-honoring choices because here's the thing. The only person that we have a relationship with 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, is ourselves. And I've seen as a life coach that the number one most dysfunctional relationship most people have is with themselves.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
that impacts everything in their life.
For sure. So how do you advise that people deal with expectations, right? Because we all have our expectations in terms of like, you know, I'm 30 years old. I should be here. I should be doing this. I should be making that much money. I'm 40 years old. I should be here. I should be doing, you know, and it's like we have sort of all of these social norms and other things that are thrown at us that frankly kind of add up into these big, huge expectations that we have of ourselves and society has of us. How do you think people should look at their life and manage their expectations about where they are, what their life looks like? And, I mean, there's got to be a process that we could begin practicing. What do you tell folks?
Yeah, great question. There's a lot I could say about that. So let's see. So the first thing is to differentiate, like to really distinguish what's like in a kind of an ego-based or societal-influenced expectation versus what's truly a heartfelt dream or longing. So expectations feel very mental. They feel very much like shoulds. They feel like a lot of pressure. And longings, like, actually feel, you can feel it in your heart. It's something that you want to experience. Expectations usually have form. They have a date. They have a specific way it's supposed to show up. And longings are more of an essence. It's more of, I want to feel connected. I want to feel loved. I want to feel creative, all those things. And what I encourage people is to not grab so tightly to expectations because it does set you up for an expectation hangover. And let go of the form and the timing that you want your dreams to come in. And really focus on how you want to feel rather than the specific result your mind thinks you need to get.
Mm-hmm.
Because everything's, all these shoulds and guidelines, you're supposed to do this by 30 and this by 40, it's just made up.
Yeah.
So and a lot of times you get those things, you check things off a list, and you're still not happy. So you're far better off focusing on how you want to feel and what you want to create. And then I'm all for goals, so I love it when people set goals, but I encourage them to pursue them with high involvement and intention, but low attachment. Because what gets us into trouble with expectations and what sets us up for a hangover is our emotional attachment. So we, you know, pursue this job and then we don't get it and we're a mess. We're a disaster because our okayness, our enoughness, our emotional stability is dependent upon getting these things. And so no wonder expectations are so dangerous.
Yeah.
But if we pursue our goals with high intention, like, okay, I'm doing everything I can in my power, but I know I'm not master of the universe. Like, I know there's a bigger plan. So I'm not going to let my okayness and my emotional stability depend on whether or not I get that result.
Well, and also I think it's important to acknowledge that sometimes there's a void between the two things. So you end what you know is not where you need to be or want to be. Then you have this space and you go in and out of moments of panic. I can tell there is something. I can feel there is something. I just can't identify it. And for me, whenever that panic starts to happen, just be aware of it and start breathing, because it is your ego freaking out, because it's like, I have nothing to hold on to here, so I'm going to make you get into motion now.
Yeah, the ego hates uncertainty, and not knowing. And I love what you said, because it reminds me of, you know, I talk a lot about a leap of faith. People think you're just going to land on this white fluffy cloud and the arms of the angels are going to be there and, oh, it's going to be great. But there's a free fall when you take a leap of faith. And when you don't know, and that's the time when we're out of our comfort zone. That's the time when we're out of our familiar. And, you know, one of the things I think that's helped me most in my life is I've developed more acceptance of not knowing and of uncertainty.
Yep.
Because that's where the most growth happens. And that's when, you know, when we're so tunnel visioned and we're so attached to the way we think it should go, there's less room for the universe to bring in those unexpected pivots or forks in the road that could absolutely be magical if you get out of your own way enough to see them.
Yeah. Now, you have your own radio show or podcast that you do called Over It and On With It. What is that show about?
I coach people live on the air. So I love coaching, and I'm a spiritual psychologist as well, and I have seen...
Do you need a degree for that, by the way, or do you just kind of call yourself a spiritual psychologist? How does that work?
I do have degrees, yeah. I think a lot of people may just say it, but no, I'm trained as a life coach, and I have degrees as well. And I have found that people really, well, people love being coached, one, and it's just, you know, I can't sing, I can't dance, like, don't put me in front of art, I'm not good at any of that stuff, but I really love coaching, and that just is so what I'm here to do. And I found that people actually transform and learn so much when they're watching or listening to someone else get coached.
Sure.
Because their defenses are down.
Yeah.
And so I wanted to create a platform where, one, I could help more people, and two, people could listen to it and have aha moments.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm having a blast. It's like,
nice.
I grew up listening to Dr. Laura.
Mm-hmm.
You know Dr. Laura?
Sure,
yeah.
For sure.
My mom always had her on, and I've always,
yep,
you know, wanted my radio talk show. And that's kind of back to your question about expectations and dreams. You know, I could sit around waiting for someone to come and give it to me, or I could create it just in a different form,
right,
but I'm still experiencing the feelings that I want to feel.
Yeah, awesome. And since you are no longer in Hollywood and you have no attachment to it really from an emotional standpoint, then all we're asking for is a connection to someone in Hollywood so we can syndicate the show. So that's our ask for you right there. Yeah, so we'll be waiting for that phone call for him. So if people want to join you live on Over It and I Want That, how do they ask you those questions? Where do they go?
You can just go search Over It and On With It on iTunes, and then if you go to christinehauser.com/podcast, that's where all the information to book a session is.
Gotcha. But if they want to join you live and you answer your question, how do you do it live for folks on the show?
If you go to the christinehauser.com/podcast, that's where you'll see something to click, and
nice,
it'll take you to how you do that.
Nice. We're going to model that one. We got to take a look at that one, guys, because that would be fun. I know we do some call-ins here every now and again, but we're going to look into that. So we're going to they call it modeling now, but we're just really going to steal it from you. So thanks, Christine, for the for the heads up on that.
My pleasure.
All right.
My
so your current book is called
Expectation Hangover. Free yourself from your past, change your present, and get what you really want.
Awesome. All right.
Nice.
So Christine Hassler, christinehassler.com is the website. Really do appreciate you coming on here on Reinvention Radio. You know, you learn something every day here. People talk about, Reinvention Radio, he's just silly, and Mary's just funny, and Richard's just funny, you know, that kind of thing. But we learn something here.
Absolutely.
You know,
great people.
Great people.
Great guests.
Always learn from our folks here. All right, so for those who have been subscribing and rating and reviewing the podcast, thank you very much. Please spread the word. If you do subscribe, rate, and review, send an email to kelly@steveolshow.com. We got a little special something for you. I have no idea what it is, but do it. I know, right? All right, guys, we'll talk to you next time on Reinvention Radio. See you later.
You just got dismantled. Thanks for listening to Reinvention Radio. For more information about the show and your host, Steve Olsher, visit reinventionradio.com.